This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
It's extremely important because it's looking at the future of the refugee protection system. So it's not just about dealing with the current crisis and the current immediate needs, but about creating a stronger system in the future that will mean that the international community takes responsibility collectively for refugee crises and not letting a handful of countries having to deal with that problem by themselves.
That's Sherif Al-Sayed Ali, Deputy Director of Amnesty International's Global Issues, commenting on the UN's Global Compact plan set to be released this hour on tackling the unprecedented global refugee crisis. Details coming up.
Also, DRC President Joseph Kabila has not announced whether he wants to run for re-election. His term expires in November, and the nation's constitution prohibits a third term.
We have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, police in Nairobi today fired tear gas and water cannons at protesters demanding that Kenya's Electoral Commission step down ahead of next year's elections. The opposition vowed last week to demonstrate every Monday. The Electoral Commission says it will not cede to their demands. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Kenyan opposition politicians and supporters took to the streets in Nairobi and some other parts of the country, calling for members of Kenya's Electoral Commission to resign. This is the second time the opposition members have marched on the electoral body offices in Nairobi. Police lobbed tear gas at the demonstrators as they tried to access the building that hosts the Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission. For an hour, police and protesters engaged in running battles along the University Road in central Nairobi. In the confusion, some students joined the protest. Former Prime Minister Raila Odinga appealed to protesters to demonstrate peacefully. Yes, Baba. We have gathered here to tell the world we, the people of Coalition of Reforms and Democracy, we're not criminals. We are people who love peace. We told the police and the Interior Minister Nkaiseri that we will have a peaceful demonstration. The opposition group accuses the electoral body of favouring the ruling Jubilee coalition during the last elections in 2013 and undercounting signatures for calling a referendum on proposed land and electoral reforms. Speaking to reporters Thursday, IEBC Chairman Isaac Hassan accused the opposition of peddling sensational claims against the commission and vowed to stay put. The chairperson called on leaders to produce evidence showing they are not fit to conduct 2017 general election. Odinga says Kenyans are tired of electoral malpractices and vowed the protest will go on. We'll have a peaceful demonstration so that we can tell the world that Kenyans are fed up with vote rigging. We cannot accept that. We will go on with the protest till the commission led by Isaac Hassan and others resign. Kenyan media report that on Sunday, the electoral body chief threatened to block opposition leaders from taking part in next year's polls if they keep trying to intimidate the commission. In a statement, a council of non-governmental organisations called on political leaders and other stakeholders to pursue dialogue on the issue of IEBC's credibility. The council called on opposition leaders and supporters to avoid activities that may jeopardise the stability of the country. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
There was a sharp drop in the number of asylum seekers who arrived in Germany last month. Officials say that's due to the closure of the Balkans route that had been in wide use by migrants and refugees traveling from Greece. AFP reports that German authorities recorded about 6,000 new arrivals in April. That's about 4,000 fewer than in March. That's when a deal between the EU and Turkey went into effect to restrict the flow of migrants and refugees. Syrians, Afghans and Iraqis made up the bulk of the new arrivals in Germany in April. Meanwhile, in Greece, the government has freed about 1,000 migrants and refugees being held in detention centers on Greek islands. However, they are still not allowed to travel to the mainland until their asylum requests are being processed. Reporter Mariana Karakulaki is following developments from the city of Thessaloniki. She told VOA's Jody Capua there were protests over the detentions yesterday.
There was quite an outrage the previous day, so especially with minors that were detained, so that's why they decided to let them out of the detention centers. Basically, everyone that arrives in the islands now is being detained. They have a 25-day permit, but at the same time they're also detained in detention centers, which are basically prisons in the islands, and they're not allowed to get out. This means that also children are being detained. So the past few days there was quite an outrage from human rights activists about children being in a prison and not having access to anything. So I think it's one of the reasons that the government decided to allow people out from the centers. But this does not mean that they are free to go wherever they want or they don't have any access to accommodation or anything. Basically, they're out of the centers, but they sleep outside if they don't have enough money to go to hotels. At the same time, this means that once their permit expires and once their asylum application is being processed, which takes like a lot of time, they're still going to be sent back to Turkey as part of the EU-Turkey deal.
Let me ask you about the refugees and migrants on the mainland. Is there any update on what's happening with them?
They still have no access to the asylum process. I read yesterday that 25 people went to Slovenia or Slovakia, if I'm not mistaken, as part of the EU relocation plan. But it's 25 people among like 54,000 that are in Greece. They are trapped here. Some of them are in detention centers in the mainland. These are those that definitely cannot ask for asylum in Greece or in the European Union. Now with Idomeni, they're putting more and more efforts to evacuate the camp, but in a very peaceful and calm way. For example, there was one organization that provided translators for the UNHCR, and they announced a few days ago that they are leaving Idomeni, which potentially means that the UNHCR now, even though it is present in Idomeni, that they did not actually provide any help. So in a way, they are putting pressure to refugees to leave from the camp and go to other camps around Greece. The camp is starting to be evacuated, but in a very slow and in a very different way from the other times.
And just to remind our listeners, Idomeni is the town near the Macedonian border where that makeshift camp is that was holding about 11,000 people. Do we have any updates on the number of people in that area now?
I think there are still more than 10,000 people, but a lot of them started leaving from Idomeni, like in a very peaceful and calm way, but they leave on their own.
The UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, is concerned that some of the migrants on the Greek islands may again resort to human smugglers to try to get them to the mainland. Have you heard of any reports of that?
I haven't heard anything about smugglers from the islands to the mainland. I think you can only get such reports if you are actually in the island. But I do know that a lot of people are taking smugglers from the mainland to reach Europe. I know quite a few people that are already in Europe now because they took smugglers. This plan that the European Union and Greece has does not actually work because those that have money, they will still reach Europe in one way or another. Basically, they're reinforcing smuggling once again.
That's reporter Mariana Karakulaki. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua from Greece.
The human rights organization Amnesty International says the United Nations Global Compact plan on the refugee crisis could be a game changer if governments back it up with concrete and long-term commitments. The plan is being released within the hour. It calls for a more predictable and equitable way of responding to large movements of refugees. Amnesty International has released its own set of recommendations that include five key elements needed to make the Global Compact effective. Sharif El-Sayed Ali is Amnesty International's Deputy Director for Global Issues. He spoke with me about the new report and what it will mean for governments as well as the 19.5 million global refugee population.
It's extremely important because it's looking at the future of the refugee protection system. So it's not just about dealing with the current crisis and the current immediate needs, but about creating a stronger system in the future that will mean that the international community takes responsibility collectively for refugee crises and not letting a handful of countries having to deal with that problem by themselves.
What are some of the aspects of it that make it different?
So it's very much about responsibility sharing among the international community for refugee crises, and it's calling for the adoption of a global compact at a summit at the United Nations in September that's being convened by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. That global compact, if states come together and adopt something that is strong, it will make a huge difference in the future. And by something strong, I believe it has to include a permanent system for resettling refugees among many, many countries in the world. Full funding for humanitarian needs, refugee crisis and otherwise, but also countries to take very concrete steps so that refugees are not stuck in camps year after year, and kind of looking at refugee camps as a temporary solution in situations of emergencies, and working so that people are able to sustain themselves outside of refugee camps and lead normal lives.
What countries is it focusing on to participate in this?
The report is very much addressing all member states of the United Nations. The U.S. is hosting a related but separate summit on the 20th of September, hosted by President Obama, that's looking at the immediate need for increasing the resettlement of refugees and the funding of the current refugee crisis. Germany has taken a big lead in Europe. Countries like the UK has been making big contributions financially. Different countries across the world have made various contributions. But overall, what we see is that very few countries have made the combination of providing financial assistance and hosting refugees. In many places, in many instances, countries do one or the other, not both.
In addition, I understand this report also will call on governments to resettle at least 10% of the global refugee population, which currently right now is at 19.5 million refugees.
So it wouldn't be 10% every year. Take a snapshot, for example, of the needs now. There would be over 1 million refugees that need resettlement currently. But if these resettlement needs are fulfilled completely, then over time, over a few years after this is done, the annual resettlement needs will be much lower. I think there's a very big argument, let's say, that if you do a big surge in resettlement for a number of years, to be able to get back to a normal level of refugees that need resettlement, then over a long time, the resettlement needs will be much lower than they are at the moment.
What are the five key elements that Amnesty is saying is needed for this?
We believe that, first of all, there has to be a permanent system for the resettlement of refugees. So that's a system that ensures that all refugees who need resettlement find these resettlement places. At the moment, global resettlement places hover around 100,000 a year. That's much less than just the need for 2016, which was at around 1.2 million refugees. Secondly, we think that there needs to be a system for distributing refugees beyond resettlement. So if you look, for example, at Europe, the Syrian refugee crisis, there is a serious need to share the responsibility with countries like Turkey, Jordan, and Lebanon beyond resettlement because they cannot cope with the number of refugees that they're hosting. There also needs to be a much more predictable funding for humanitarian emergencies. At the moment, refugee appeals tend to be persistently underfunded, which means that refugees do not get access to adequate health care. They can't go to school. There's hundreds of thousands of refugee children who have been outside of schools for years, and they have difficulty finding housing that fulfills their very, very basic need of shelter. And then we also believe that countries need to increase opportunities for refugees to be self-reliant so that they're able to have a better standard of living over the long time, that they're able to contribute to the economy, and then they're not stuck in refugee camps for years on end.
Sherif El-Sayed Ali is Amnesty International's Deputy Director for Global Issues. He spoke with me from London. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wahib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Police in Nairobi today fired tear gas and water cannon at protesters, demanding that Kenya's Electoral Commission step down ahead of next year's elections. And there was a sharp drop in the number of asylum seekers who arrived in Germany last month. due to the closure of the Balkans route. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A Nigerian appeals court has upheld the 25-year prison sentences handed down to three men tried secretly on terror charges. The men were lined to Boko Haram. The French news agency says the appeals court today upheld the decision handed down in September by the federal high court. They were found guilty of conspiracy, acts of terrorism, and possession of firearms and ammunition.
DRC President Joseph Kabila has not announced whether he wants to run for re-election. His term expires in November, but the nation's constitution prohibits a third term. Nevertheless, Mr. Kabila's supporters reportedly are slowing the electoral process in order to keep him in power for at least another year. Experts say the maneuver is called slippage. VOA David Arnold has the story.
Joseph Kabila inherited the political mantle of his father when Laurent Kabila was assassinated in 2001. He was a 30-year-old military officer when he assumed the presidency 8 days later. He has been elected twice since then, but the Constitution says he can't run again, and the president has not announced what he wants to do. Chris Beervoorts is the director of a network of 50 European NGOs on Central Africa. He says he's not surprised that Mr. Kabila has been silent on the subject 6 months before his final term expires.
President Kabila is very weak in coming to decisions. He has difficulties coming to a decision in a reasonable amount of time.
Beervoorts adds that until Mr. Kabila announces his intentions, the future of the government is a mystery. He says it's possible Mr. Kabila does not want to run for president again.
You can't exclude it, to be honest. I believe that he has a lot of pressure of the people around him to remain in power. There is a lot of people who depend on him, who have been very important in maintaining his regime, and who have no political future beyond Kabila's reign. And these people might use their influence to convince him to remain in place.
Mr. Kabila's delay in announcing his decision could mean a postponement of the presidential election until sometime in 2017.
At this stage, very few people believe that it's possible to have free and fair elections before the end of the year. This will probably mean that we have a period ahead of us where it will take extra time to organize the elections. The estimated time by many is maybe 1 year. At this moment, I can imagine, although it will not be easy, that a large political consensus between position and majority could be achieved.
There have been many instances in Africa whereby a constitution that contains term limits has been amended to permit a third term. DRC's ruling party tried that in 2014, but failed. Beervoorts says the president was not able to sustain the semblance of unity within his party and in the national legislature.
They tried to slow the process down, and this has to do with the fact that it is probably the last remaining strategy for Kabila to remain in power. They tried to change the constitution and create the environment for Kabila to have the possibility for a third mandate. They failed to do that, and the remaining strategy is to remain as long as possible in his second and present mandate. That's why some people within the government try to slow down the process as much as they can.
The leading opposition candidate is Moise Katumbi, the former governor of Katanga province. Katumbi has the support of at least three opposition parties. The Ministry of Justice has accused Katumbi of hiring mercenaries. Katumbi's supporters say the charges are false and politically motivated. Katumbi lost his government security detail when he left the ruling party. He then hired a handful of former U.S. soldiers to serve as his bodyguards as he prepared for his own presidential campaign.
He has been quite successful as governor of Katanga. He has a reputation of being a good organizer, someone who gets things done. As someone who is generous and social, he has the looks and the money for a good campaign. He's a populist, so there are a lot of things which give him some possibilities to mobilize a large crowd in Congo.
In the latest developments, opposition candidate Katumbi has appeared before prosecutors to address the government allegations he's hired mercenaries. He has described the accusations as a grotesque lie, saying his opponents are trying to harm him. Bervoritz says political uncertainty in DRC creates some risks for a large country with big economic problems. He says the population is angry over poor living conditions, and he warns violence could erupt at any time. There were election-related riots in Kinshasa in January of last year. David Arnold, VOA, Washington, D.C.
Malawi's government has called for the arrest of street beggars and parents of all children seen begging on the street. The government says most of the people on the street are begging as a profession, not a last resort. But the edict has sparked debate and police are yet to crack down. Lamek Messina reports from Blantyre.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning. The streets of Malawi's commercial capital, Blantyre, are bustling with people going to work. Beggars on the sides of those streets ask for money. Many are disabled. 51-year-old Confuse Billiard was born with deformed limbs. He says this is the only way I earn a living. I give some money to my wife to help her business of selling fritters and buy food and pay school fees for my children and pay for rent. Fanny Banda, a single mother of four, cannot walk. She must claw or use a wheelchair. She says we face a lot of abuses in the streets. Some people call us names while others scold at us saying, why can't we stay home and fend for ourselves? Street begging in Malawi is punishable by a fine of about $2 or 3 months in jail. The government called on police to begin enforcing the law in April and to arrest adults who send children into the streets to beg. Mary Shawa is the principal secretary in the Ministry of Gender, Children, Disabilities and Social Welfare.
It also goes further to say anybody giving money in illegal terms, they call it arms, to beggars on the street, that person has broken the law. And they should also be arrested.
Shawa says the government did a study and found that only about 400 of the 4,500 people begging on the streets of Malawi's two biggest cities are begging out of an acute need. But religious leaders and advocates for the disabled say arrests are not the answer. The government should instead ensure access to education and employment. Hilda Misomali, a hairdresser, says people should be free to give to the beggars if they want.
I think that's not fair because others have just the heart to give. Others just give them because they have maybe a lot. Others give them because the way they look, the children themselves, they make you sometimes to give them, even if you didn't want to give them.
But the government says having people, in particular children, milling the streets is dangerous and that people can give to the needy at their homes or in other ways. 1 month into the crackdown, police say they have yet to make any arrests. They are holding community meetings and trying to educate parents, religious leaders, and shop owners. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Peter Hundley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk, boxing. Is it barbaric or a great sport? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing boxing. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
African music
hits. Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African music mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.